Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with pianist Jeffrey Siegel. He's the host of a concert series he calls Keyboard Conversations, in which he tells stories about the music before performing the works. Coming up was a program called Keys to the Classics. Jeffrey Siegel, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
This program we're talking about is called Keys to the Classics, Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. What are the keys, so to speak, to the classics?
Well, first of all, the idea of classics, obviously great music that has survived its time, we call classics. And it has a double meaning in this case with this particular program, because the great classic period that we speak of in music history generally is the last half of the 18th century. And unquestionably, the two greatest composers of that time were Haydn and Mozart. And when one thinks about it, we're going to be hearing music on this program given in 2017 that was written 225, 250 years ago. So these are classic pieces from the classic period. And when you think of Haydn and Mozart, you're talking of composers whose music is in the forefront of the repertoire today. So it's great music, it's classic, but it comes from what we call the classic period. And of course, with Beethoven, and we'll have the Pathetique Sonata of Beethoven on this program, he has sort of one foot in the 18th century and a very big foot in the Romantic 19th century. So keys to the classics. I will be, of course, playing each of the compositions straight through, as I do on a keyboard conversation program. I'm hoping that what I say about the compositions before I play them will be keys, if you will, for the listener to have enriched appreciation of what they're hearing. And if they happen to be hearing these pieces for the first time, that what I say provides an accessible introduction to the works.
You mentioned that there are many periods of music, and we call all of it classical music, even though some of the what we call classical music is from the Baroque period or the Renaissance or the Romantic period. Why do we call all of it classical music?
My definition for this is that it survived its time. And people often ask me, as I'm sure they do you today, you know, what music being written today seems destined to be heard 50 years from now? And the only real answer to that is that we all have to live in wonderful health 50 more years at least to be able to look back at the music being written at the beginning of the 21st century that we're listening to 50 years afterwards and say, ah, it survived, so it's a classic. You cannot really tell what is going to be a classic in your own time because you're in the time. And history of music teaches us to be very careful about making these judgments. We may have discussed this before, Susan, but when Bach died in 1750, nobody thought his music would survive. He was already considered passé and an old fuddy-duddy. And when Rachmaninoff died in 1943, people didn't think his music would be listened to because it was already 50 years behind time in its musical language. So it really teaches you to be very careful about predicting what's going to be a classic. But we, with great assurance, can look back at Haydn and Mozart and Debussy and Ravel and Stravinsky and Prokofiev and say they have become classics.
And Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven were composing in the period we call the classical period. So they are the giants of that period.
Absolutely.
And perhaps gave the whole genre its popular name.
Yes. We are superimposing a historical terminology when we call that the classic period. And in a way, Mozart wrote some of the most romantic, deeply expressive music imaginable, music that you can understand why Chopin in a later generation was so inspired by the romanticism of Mozart's music. And Chopin, whom we consider a great romantic composer, which he was, had a certain classic decorum to his music. He hated all excess. He wanted everything to be balanced and beautifully shaped and written out. So Chopin, in many ways, had many of the ideals of the earlier classic composers. So one has to be careful with these terms.
Basically, music historians have looked back and put them in categories.
That's right.
But it's a continuum.
That's right.
Even Bach, you say Bach died in 1750. That's the beginning of the classical period, and many composers look back to Bach.
Right, absolutely.
So what are some of the great stories behind these three composers?
Well, we talk about Haydn and Mozart very often, almost in the same breath, because they lived at the same time. It's such a beautiful relationship to read of between Haydn and Mozart. Haydn was the elder by 23 years and was to outlive Mozart by 18 years. And what's interesting, Susan, Haydn believed Mozart was the greatest composer of the age, and Mozart believed Haydn was the greatest composer of the age. And in my opinion, both of them were correct. They were on a plane that was incomparable, and they loved one another, and they loved one another's music. And Haydn never got over the death of Mozart. Years after Mozart died, if Mozart's name would be mentioned in Haydn's presence, Haydn would break into tears, and he'd apologize by saying, "You have to forgive me, but I loved the man so dearly, and his music meant so much to me." Not all musicians, not all composers of a given period, love one another and love one another's work like this, but that's certainly the case with Haydn and Mozart. And on the program that I'm giving on the 9th of January, we're going to hear a very festive, buoyant, high-spirited sonata of Haydn. Haydn once said he wanted, above all, for his music to raise the spirits of the listener, to refresh and entertain the listener. And the work with Haydn that will be on that program certainly does that. With Mozart, we have three very different short pieces: the famous Rondo alla Turca, first of all, what's a rondo? Why does this sound so exotic? And why did it have, from Mozart, Rondo alla Turca? What's Turkish about it? Why did he want to have Turkish elements in the piece of music, as he conceived Turkish elements when he wrote the piece? We're also going to have a piece of music of Mozart's that I would say is one of his most personal, intimate, brooding compositions. Mozart was a composer who always wanted to write public music, music with the listener in mind, but not this piece. This is one of his most private compositions, this A minor rondo. One captures, I think, the special essence of it right from the opening phrase. What's going on in Mozart's life that he writes a piece of music that's this pensive, that's been called Ideals Lost? Then we will also have on the program the famous Pathetique Sonata of Beethoven, and one only has to hear the opening few moments of it to know this is not just Sunday afternoon picnic music. It seems that the subtitle, the French word pathétique, which means with deep pathos, derived from the Greek word pathos, this was not Beethoven's original idea, but it was the publisher's. The publisher realized that this was so different from anything else Beethoven had written up to this time that the publisher suggested this subtitle, pathétique, and Beethoven allowed it to be published. It's the first work of Beethoven that has a nickname that, in essence, he sanctioned. And it's loaded with pathos, loaded with deep expressivity. And in my opinion, there's something going on in Beethoven's life also, which brings about this very special piece of music.
What was going on in Beethoven's life?
In my view, the fact that Beethoven writes this piece when he's 28, 29 years old is significant, because it's at that period of time that he realizes that his hearing is diminishing. And he's beginning to sense that this is not just in his own imagination, that it's real. And he's beginning to deal in his own mind with the fact that this hearing loss that he's beginning to experience is not imaginary, and that it's real. And there's no happy ending to this piece of music. And in terms of Beethoven's hearing, there was no happy ending there either. He did go deaf. It's a very personal piece of his. I particularly love, if I may say, the gorgeous and very noble second movement of this sonata, which one can talk about. And I believe my colleague Alfred Brendel has spoken of it as blissful rapture. Then comes the finale. Now, the finale, and certainly in Beethoven, Haydn, Mozart's time, the finale is supposed to be lighthearted and charming, to bring a smile of contentment that all is well in the well-ordered world. I'm only going to play the way Beethoven ends this piece of music. The last thing, and exactly, you know, your reaction is exactly, you can imagine what it must have been in Beethoven's day for a finale of a piece of music, which is supposed to bring the smile of contentment to the listener, to end with this explosion in dark harmony. And the publisher realizes this is different from anything even Beethoven has provided for us, and therefore, Pathetique Sonata.
Well, it's interesting, you spoke about the relationship between Haydn and Mozart, and Beethoven was just about 14 years younger than Mozart. Was he looking back at Mozart and Haydn as well?
When Beethoven first went to Vienna from his native Bonn, it was to study with Haydn. It's believed that he met Mozart at the time. Mozart heard him and said, this is a man who's going to create a big noise in the world, or something to that effect. There's no proof of this, but I'd like to believe it was true. But Beethoven came to Vienna specifically to work with Haydn, and did. And of course, he had great reverence for both these composers. And even when Beethoven was at the height of his fame, he heard some composition of Mozart's, and he mentioned to his friend Cramer, you know, none of us will ever be able to produce anything like this. So this has to be stressed, Susan. All these composers did not have to wait to die before they were recognized as great composers, and that their music probably would live on. Unlike Schubert, whoever the magnitude of Schubert's creative genius was not really known, except maybe to a very small circle of people, when Schubert died in 1828. With Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven, they were highly acclaimed composers in their lifetime.
When you consider these three composers together and with the pieces that you've chosen for this program, what new insights have you gotten when you think about them?
I think one of the joys and the privileges of being a musician and a music lover, I think as you get older, it's these works of the great classic masters that mean the most to you. There's no greater music and no more moving, deeply affecting music than the works of these great classic composers. And as with all great music, I think not only does it mean more, you see more in it as you get older and you've played these pieces many times and heard them many times. As you know them better, they get greater. I think that's really the answer. I've been playing and hearing these pieces all my life, and I'm more excited about playing them now and sharing with the audience why I find them so fascinating than at any other time in my life. And to get back to your question about classic, I think this can be said of the great classic composers, whether we're talking Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, or Chopin, Schumann, and Liszt, or Debussy and Ravel, or that's how it is. These really great pieces you come back to over and over again, and they're new, and and you find more and more that touches you, that engages you.
And maybe why we call it classical music is because they've provided such a strong framework for the future.
Yeah, it's hard to think of a composer who was not inspired and guided by any one, if not all three, of these composers. One thinks of Tchaikovsky's sheer admiration for Mozart and Chopin. Of course, there are all kinds of connections.
And the wonderful thing about your stories is that we're studying these composers who have become iconic, almost superhuman in our minds, and your stories reveal the deep humanity of each of them.
Well, I'm one of these people who believe that the pieces of music we're going to hear are written by human beings, exceptional human beings, deep-feeling human beings, and great creative geniuses in that they were able to convey in musical tones thoughts and feelings that would be very difficult to convey in words. Somebody once said that music begins where words leave off, and I think, in essence, that's true. There's this wonderful story of Beethoven's playing something for someone, and the person saying, you know, I don't understand it. And he thought for a moment and then sat down and just played the piece again. The music speaks for itself.
That's great. Thank you so much, Jeffrey Siegel.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.